I want to thank you for coming live. I want to thank the chevra who are here joining by Zoom. Tonight is what's now the second part of our shiur on talking to kids about dinosaurs and Bereshis. It's now the second part, thanks to the extraordinary patience of the fellows who joined us Zoom last night. I'm sorry that because of all the audio and Zoom issues, we kept being on and off and on and off. We did not have as much time as we anticipated. So last night we had a chance to focus on the talking to your kids. I want to focus tonight on the dinosaurs and Bereshis. Last night we had a chance to think about a number of the meta issues in terms of engaging children proactively in discussion about Emunah, engaging children proactively in discussion about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and being comfortable with questions. And being comfortable knowing that we don't have to have all the answers. We wouldn't expect to have all the answers. Ilu yidativ ha'yisiv. The only way we can fully know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to be Him. Only the fine, infinite Creator can fully understand Him. So we expect, HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to seek to understand Him as much as we can. As we mentioned yesterday, the various Rishonim comment on the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, Da'aso Elokei Avicha, that we begin with Elokei Avicha, we can begin with certain religious axioms and then seek Yidia, seek to understand them as much as we can, and with that, the balanced spirit. So we jump into this question in particular of understanding dinosaurs and Bereshis, and making sense of what appears to be a flat-out contradiction. Is the universe 6,000 years old, or the universe 15 billion years old? Sometimes there are conflicts between the Torah and science. A different conflict lends themselves to different resolutions. And there will be times when the answer is, as we discuss other occasions, the camels and Bereshis. Sometimes the scholarship is faulty. Sometimes the scholarship is spotty. But there are multiple independent indications, very strong, well-founded indications that the universe, scientifically speaking, the universe is way more, or many orders of magnitude, more than 6,000 years old. You open up the psukim. The psukim are clear. 6 days of Bria, and then we can count the year, the chronology in Bereshis, the chronology in Noach, and it's less than 6,000 years from then to now. So what are we to make of this? So it's a great question, and yesterday he's focused on the value of questions, and welcoming questions, and thinking about it. As I said yesterday, think about how one is going to answer a particular audience. Thinking about how much of the richness of the answer is a particular child ready to handle at their age, what's age appropriate, and how much are they interested in. And I mentioned yesterday, I believe an absolutely accurate answer is that the machlokas, did dinosaurs roam the earth millions of years ago? The answer, an accurate answer is, it's a machlokas tamei chacham. Some would say yes, and some would say no. For the younger kids, they may not be capable of understanding more. There may be older kids who are interested in hearing more. Machlokas. But now I want to dive in a little bit for our children and for ourselves into what that machlokas is. Because I think there are at least three ways. Yesterday we got cut off time-wise. We didn't have a chance to really expand upon what I believe are at least three approaches to this question. One we could call Bereshis Kipshuto, one we could call Science Kipshuto, and the third we could call both Bereshis and Science Kipshuto. So and they were all rooted in Mekoros. Let's begin with what we did not touch on at all yesterday, which is Bereshis Kipshuto. This is the approach that's ascribed to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And it's really rooted in a Gemara in Maseches Chulin. If you have the Gemara comes in front of you, feel free to take a look. Chulin Daf Samach Amud Aleph, a Gemara commentary on this week's parsha. The Gemara is talking about the question of which came first, the chicken or the egg. The Gemara's psak is the chicken. Gemara says, "Kol Maaseh Bereshis." First, the Gemara speaks about Adam HaRishon, and then it expands to all of Maaseh Bereshis, all of the Brios. Gemara first speaks about Adam HaRishon, that he was never bikomaso. He was never at full height, full height, which both means literally full height, and more broadly, fully developed. Adam Arishon, when he was chronologically only seconds old, he was developmentally adult. Kadosh Baruch Hu created him as an adult. Rabbeinu Shlomo didn't create him as a baby. And the Gemara goes on to say that's not only true for Adam and Chava, it's true for all the Brias. Whereas the Gemara says in Chulin, Daf Samach, Kol Ma'aser Breishis, all of Ma'aser Breishis was Niver Beko Masan, B'datan, B'tzivyonam, everything was created fully formed. V'yachulu Hashamayim V'aretz V'chol Tzivaam. The Gemara says, what's the significance of the armies? V'chol Tzivaam, a pasuk that we're going to be saying tomorrow night, Mirtz Hashem, three times over the course of a Friday night. B'chol Tzivaam, Al Tikri Tzivaam El Tzivyonam. And Tosas there is clear. They were created developmentally mature. So what that means is if we would have given, imagine a doctor would have given a physical exam to Adam Arishon, he would have seemed as though he had gone through 30, 40 years of normal development. Kadosh Baruch Hu created Adam mature. Kadosh Baruch Hu created a mature chicken and a mature hippopotamus. So I'm not sure, and this is what the Lubavitcher Rebbe said. Why wouldn't you assume that what's true for human beings and for hippopotamuses and for mosquitoes isn't also true for plants and for solar systems and for galaxies? Kadosh Baruch Hu created when the hippopotamus was a second old, it looked as though it was 10, 15 years old, however old a mature hippopotamus is. And Kadosh Baruch Hu created a planet that when it was moments old, it looked like it was what a mature planet will look like. The hippopotamus looked like it had gone through 15 years of biology and chemistry, 15 years of development, and the planet looked like it had gone through a couple of million years of chemistry and geology. A mature world. So that's the first approach. Now, if you take that, if you indeed says believe the Lubavitcher Rebbe did, that this Gemara applies not only to living things but to all of the cosmos, so that what it means is you're going to look around the world and everything looks, it's an exact replica of what a mature everything would look like. And all the evidence you're going to see, the redshift and the light that appears to have been traveling for billions of years, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who created the physics and the chemistry, created an exact replica. So you, in fact, what emerges is that the universe is, in fact, literally less than 6,000 years old. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally created the universe over the course of 6 times 24 hours. And by the time Rabbeinu Shlomo was done with that process, he had created a universe that at chronologically was up to 6 days old, but looked as though it was millions and billions of years old. And you can derive correct principles of physics by studying what we see. You can go to Palomar and you can use Hubble, and everything that you'll reconstruct is based on accurate principles. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu created the physics and the chemistry, created looking like an exact replica. Now, thinking more about this first approach, the Bereishis Kipshuto, that Kadosh Baruch Hu created the universe over literally 6 24-hour days, but created a universe that looked as though it was billions of years old. I think it's important to point out that this is not the only Teretz, but that this Teretz. This teretz is not the same as what people sometimes say. Oh, Kadosh Baruch Hu created the, put the dinosaur bones there just to test us, to fool us. I don't think this is the same thing. It is true that if you accept this answer and accept this application, this broadening of the Gemara and Chulin, it's logically impossible to assail. There can be no scientific evidence against it because everything's an exact replica. It does look millions and billions of years old. But it's not at all the same as saying that Kadosh Baruch put the dinosaur bones there to test us. I think there's a very strong svara bedavar. You can explain why this makes a whole lot of sense. The reason why Rabbi Shimon would have created Adam Rishon, adult, and that the Gemara is clear about, is that the universe has a purpose. As the Ramchal tells us in the beginning of many Sfarim, Mesil Susharim, Adar Hashem, and many other Sfarim, rooted, as Rav Ayer Kaplan points out, in the writings of Rav Sadia Gaon and others, HaKadosh Baruch created the universe for a purpose. HaKadosh Baruch created Olam Hazeh, as the Mishnah tells us, is a prozdor al Olam Haba. HaKadosh Baruch created Olam Hazeh as the ultimate arena of challenge. The goal of the design purpose of Olam Hazeh is to provide the setting in which billions of people can undergo trillions of nisyonos. And that's the goal of Olam Hazeh, to be the Olam HaNisayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates Adam mature immediately, so he's ready to go. Puts him right into Gan Eden, and here's your first mitzvah, and here's your first nisayon. Here's your first moral struggle. You do the right thing, do the wrong thing. Here's your bechir chafshus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu fast forwarded. If Adam would have been developmentally a day old, a week old, a year old, he's not yet mature enough to fulfill his purpose of being omid bin nisayon. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu fast forwards things and creates Adam mature. At the same time, the Rambam and Ramban both tell us in a number of places, in various Sfarim, that while it's true that belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a Borei Olam implies that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do any nes that he wants to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the entire universe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created math and physics and chemistry and biology, obviously he has the power to suspend it at will, but at the same time, the Rambam both write about HaKadosh. We see from looking at the world, and we see from our Masorah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses generally to not do that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will rarely do nisim. The Rabban works on when will HaKadosh Baruch Hu do nisim. Usually it's to solve a particular problem, Yeshua for Klai Yisrael, Yeshua for a Tzaddik. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do a nes in order to reveal himself, as Ramban writes in Parshas Bo, to teach, and the Makos were there to teach Emuna. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does Nisim for a particular purpose. Rabbi Hashem chose that the universe should generally be rhythmic and patterned. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created laws of nature, and with the intent, that with the desire, the universe should generally follow these rules. And everyone said, well, Rabbi Hashem will choose to make an exception, to perform a miracle. But in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he could have chosen otherwise. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have chosen to create an entirely random universe, but he didn't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose, we can try to guess why that might be, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to create a scientific and mathematical universe, a patterned rhythmic universe. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants things to generally be natural, and the Ramban goes on to say, even when he does Nisim, he'll make the Nisim as minimal as possible. He'll make things as natural as possible. So if that's the case, so if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating a universe, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to, let's get right to the point, let's get right to the purpose of the universe, which is human beings in a developed universe ready to be Omeid Bini Sayon. So even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to choose to fast forward to the point, but he's going to create a universe that's in tune as much as possible with the principles of physics and chemistry and biology that he created. So it stands to reason that we understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu might have chosen to not wait the millions of years and the billions of years to get to the point where the universe is ready to fulfill its purpose, but rather to jump right to a developed world with a developed human being, with a neshama, ready to Omeid Bini Sayon. But at the same time, he's going to make everything an exact replica because he wants it to be, as Ramban says, as natural as possible. I think that's the svara for this first approach to Bereishis Kipshut. It's not saying, oh, HaKadosh Baruch put the dinosaur bones there to test us. No. HaKadosh Baruch, we know that HaKadosh Baruch, that the purpose of Olam Hazeh was to be Olam HaNisayon. We know that HaKadosh Baruch who seeks to minimize Nisim as much as possible. So it stands to reason, so that it helps us to understand the Komasa Nivru, which the Gemara says, and it stands to reason that should apply broadly even to inanimate parts of the universe as well, and to the universe as a whole. So that's the first approach. And I should mention, as we dive into these three approaches, as we continue to number two and number three, to my mind, all of these are authentic from a Torah perspective and potentially satisfying intellectually. Different people will find different approaches, you know, more or less appealing. And as I said before, I think it's a machlokas. I think that's tadim lakan lakan. So some people find approach number one grabs them. Some people say approach number one doesn't speak to me. Approach number two, approach number three, all of them, some of them, have ma'ayin yivcha. But that's approach number one that is voracious, kipshuto, expanding with the Gemara says in Chulin Daf Samach, based on this week's parsha, the kamasa nivru to the entire universe. And then on the other hand, there's the signs kipshuto, and the bracha is not kipshuto. And that's based, we began to speak about this very briefly yesterday, that's rooted in this Mishnah in Chagiga. The Mishnah begins the second parak of Chagiga is talking about different parts of Kabbalah that need to be taught only to limited, unique audiences. And then the Gemara expands here. A couple of blot begin the second paragraph of Chagiga about Kabbalah, content of Kabbalah, and about learning Kabbalah, about the dangers of learning Kabbalah, and how to teach, and to whom to teach, and so on and so forth. And the Mishnah seems to mention at least two areas of Kabbalah, of Chachmas HaNistar. Masa Merkava and Masa Bereshis. So what do these mean? Masa Merkava and Masa Bereshis. So Rav Aryeh Kaplan writes in various Svarim. Unfortunately, I came across this only in Svarim that he wrote without footnotes, so it's hard for me to know where he got this from. Probably Svarim that you and I don't have access to anyhow. But he tries to give sort of like a Lisaberes HaOzen, to give some sense of what this is. And Rav Yosef Avivi, who wrote the Ramchal expert in Eretz Yisrael, who wrote the footnotes, the end notes on the Ofek publication of the Mesilas Yesharim from Ksav Yad, he writes along similar lines also. The Masem, or the concept of Masem Merkava, Masem Breishis, Masem Merkava is about the path that a person takes towards Ribbono Shel, and Masem Breishis is a study of how a Kodesh Baruch Hu impacts the world. As Rav Yosef Avivi puts it, Masa Merkava is a study of Mesilas Yesharim, and Masa Bereishis is a study of Derech Hashem. Masa Merkava, and this is something that idea that that Rav Aryeh Kaplan develops at length, Masa Merkava is a study of the primarily of the first paragraph of the Cheskel, the Haftarah to the first day of Shavuos. I've wondered over the years, I think I mentioned to both of you, The minig of the last couple of centuries of staying up all night to learn means that many people are not awake for the Haftarah of Merkava. So maybe there's many layers to that. But be that as it may, when you open the first paragraph of Yecheskel, it's all about how things work in Shamayim, different levels of Malachim, the Chayos, the Ofanim, and the Kisei HaKavod, and the anatomy, so to speak, of Malachim. So you read it and you understand right away that this is not meant literally, that these are metaphors for far, far grander, deeper concepts. When the Yecheskel says the Malachim have three pairs of wings, he's using the bird anatomy, obviously, to describe something much grander and deeper. And specifically, Yosef Avivi and Rav Kaplan suggest, it really describes sort of the process of Nevuah. It's describing how a Jew grows to be closer to Ribbono Shel Olam, and that the highest rungs of Mesilas Yesharim are Kiddush and Ruach HaKodesh. So that's what's being captured through the metaphor of the first parak of Yecheskel. And the first parak of Yecheskel strikes us right away as being very overtly mystical and Kabbalistic, and clearly there's way more going on than the literal meaning of the words. What's intriguing is that the next area that the Mishnah mentions is Ma'aseh Breishis. So Ma'aseh Breishis, Yosef Avivi and Rabbi Kaplan suggest, it's sort of the other side of the coin. How a Kadosh Baruch Hu impacts the world. How a Kadosh Baruch Hu is mashpia on the world. How Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world, metaphysically speaking. Now that sounds equally mystical. Parallel, Derech Mesilas Yesharim, Derech Hashem, the two directions, Hanhagas HaAdam El HaBorei, Hanhagas HaBorei El HaAdam VeEl HaOlam. But what's interesting is Ma'aser Merkava is named for the Merkava parak, the first parak of Yecheskel, which is obviously mystical. Ma'aser Bereishis is named for and is a study of the first parak of Bereishis, which, you know, this question, this stira between, you know, Bereishis and the Big Bang is rooted in assuming that we should be reading Bereishis as a description of physical reality. But the simple implication of Chagiga is that Ma'aser Bereishis is Kabbalah the same way Ma'aser Merkava is Kabbalah, which means just like the six wings of the Malachim in Yecheskel don't literally mean that there's a creature with six feathery wings. It's describing far grander ideas. The same is true here as well, potentially. And if you see that, take a look at the Maram Kamos, it would take more time than we have to read this inside, but I highlighted a couple of lines in the Ramban's Pirush on Pasuk Aleph, and then he references Pasuk Vav as well, which maybe we'll take a look at. He says repeatedly that at least the first parak, at one point it sounds like even much of Bereishis and Noach fall under the rubric of a Ma'aser Bereishis, and that there's much more than Mitzia. It's a metaphor for Kabbalah. He says at the end of Pasuk Aleph, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have just told, if he didn't want to tell us all sorts of deeper sotos, he could have just told us what it says in Aseres HaDibros, in Parshas Yisra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and that would be enough. And the Yechidim would know, Halacha L'moshe Misinai Tar Shalpeh would know the Kabbalah. So the implication, Rabban doesn't say it directly, but the implication, there are those who suggest this, is that we should not assume that the opening parak of Bereishis is here to explain to us the how. Instead, it's here to explain to us the why. It's a metaphorical description of the ways in which Ribono Shel Olam metaphysically impacts the world. How HaKadosh Baruch Hu mashpia on the world? What does it mean? I don't know. I'm not a makubal. So you got to go ask a makubal if you're ready. Go ask a makubal and find out what this means. It's the way the Maral. Rav Chaim Freelander quotes in his Chanukah Mamarim from Maral. Maral points out, as Ramchal does, that in Agados in Chazal, Agados in the Bavli, very often they'll talk about science, they'll use science as a mashal to describe Kabbalistic concepts. And Maral in particular says, sometimes you have a Gemara talk about the sun and the moon, and it's not really talking about, he says, the astronomical sun and the moon. It's really a description of sort of the concepts, the ideas that the sun and the moon express and that metaphysically power the physical sun and the moon. We're discussing something much larger, much bigger, and much more significant, but we don't necessarily fully understand it. I would turn your attention to look inside just at Ramban and Pasuk Vav, the very bottom of the first page of the Maram Kamos, when he talks about the waters above, the waters that are above the Rakia. So what does that mean? It's fascinating. He says, "Zeh me'inyan ma'aser Bereishis." This is part of ma'aser Bereishis. Well, yes, of course. Well, this is all, the whole parak is ma'aser Bereishis. No, he means this is part is kabbalistic. This is part of this parak that is only explicable kabbalistically. The al tikaveh mimeni she'echtav odover. Don't hope that I'm going to write anything to explain it. She'ha'inyan hu misisrei ha'Torah. This is part of the secrets of the Torah. It says, "Ha'peirush aser liyoda of v'kol shekein eleinu." What a remarkable line! The peirush is aser even to those who know it, and certainly to us. Right? This is deep, 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 deep Kabbalah. So again, it's hard to know from the Ramban how much does this mean, the entire parak, the whole idea of 6 days, or just some of the details. But again, in Pasuk Aleph, he appears at one point to be saying even Gan Eden is also part of, and even Dar HaMabul, Dar HaFlaga, it's hard to know how to read the Ramban, but there are those who suggest that much of Bereishis and Noach may be Kabbalistic, and we might be, and this is the second approach, the science kipshuto, to say that as the Maral we quoted before, that the science is explaining the what, and the Chumash is explaining the why, and Lo Karav Zel Zeh. And then finally, the third approach is both kipshuta. And that would be to say that that both Bereishis and the signs are explaining the what of the world, and they are accurately explaining what happened. And that's usually based on an approach that Rav Munk develops, but the roots of it, Munk lived in the early 20th century, but the roots of this approach are already in the Tiferes Yisrael. The Tiferes Yisrael, Yisrael Lifshitz, is most famous for his Pirush Yachnu Boaz and all of Mishnais. And he wrote many fascinating things. He was very attuned to scientific discoveries of his time. And he was alive and working and thinking at the time they began to find fossils. And he said, maybe there are midrashim that talk about worlds, whole cycles of worlds that existed before this one. So he says, if you find different layers in the fossil record, and there are different extinctions, maybe that's exactly what Chazal already describing. So along those lines, so Rav Leo Munk suggested that when the Torah speaks about days, 6 days, that may be a way of saying six periods of time. And there are different scientists, different from scientists who have expanded this in different ways. Different people find different flavors. Jared Schroeder is very famous for his logarithmic time scale. He works out to do it logarithmically. So day one, day two, day three, day four, day five, day six, it corresponds to the chronology that's accepted by cosmologists, by astronomers, by paleobiologists. I personally find, if you can take the third approach, that the science and Bereishis both Kipshutan, find the Natan Aviezer's approach personally the most attractive. He's very open about the fact in the beginning. He does not think he has worked everything out. As we said when we got started, we don't expect to fully understand the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's infinite, we're finite, as Yeshayahu reminds us in every single town of Tzibur. But there's a lot that we can make sense of. And both Schroeder and Aviezer highlight that if you open up the first parak of Chumash with a lot of scientific knowledge under your belt, it's remarkable the extent to which things really fit in. It's remarkable the extent to which in 31 or so psukim of biblical Hebrew, Kadosh Baruch Hu is condensing so much of what scientists have more recently discovered. Aviezer talks about Pangaea as maybe being part of what's going on the second day. And I would highlight just one particular example. The first day. Let's talk about the first day, and let's wrap up with this. If you're interested, certainly I'd recommend that you read further in terms of this. There's a tremendous amount of detail to work through in terms of all the 6 days of Bria. But let's just start with the opening psukim, the first day of Bria. So what does the Torah tell us? The Torah tells us that at first there was nothingness and everything was confused. Then the first Bria that's clearly stated is Or. Or and Choshech. And then, a couple of decades ago, scientists realized that the universe is expanding, which, number one, as we said yesterday, is scientists coming around after 1,000 years to recognize that there was a Bori Olam, there was a Bria, there was a moment when mathematics and physics and matter and energy as we know them began, and something outside that system got that started. That's what scientists call the Big Bang, and that's what we call something outside of the system of nature, something supernatural, that's whom we refer to as the Ribbono Shel Olam, as the Bori Olam. And moreover, the Big Bang Theory understands that the universe, speaking loosely, begins with an incredibly intense, extraordinarily intense point of energy, a point of light, which rapidly expands and cools and begins to variegate into different sorts of energy and different sorts of matter, and ultimately becomes the universe that we have today. But that's exactly what the Torah told us thousands of years ago, that the Bria began with R. But that R is Ganuz, that Kadosh Baruch Hu said that intensity of energy would be hidden. That's exactly what science has more recently discovered. So that's an example of this third approach. So again, I think there are at least three approaches that are authentic vis-a-vis the Makoros and can be potentially, I find, personally, intellectually satisfying. I can only speak for my own taste. See which one you approach, which approach speaks to you, which approach speaks to your children. And again, as we said, it developed yesterday to in responding to questions to be age appropriate and to give the degree of sophistication detail that kids are capable of and their kids are interested in. but certainly in the large, to welcome questions and to be excited to understand the Dvar Hashem, and in the broader sense, as we said yesterday, to seek to make this part of a larger enterprise of bringing HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our conversation, our own conversations, our family conversations, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be part of our lives. When we speak about halacha, when we speak about life, and that is Shavis Hashem Legdi Samet. That's how Shulchan Aruch opens, and that's how we close this evening. Yashikach. Thank you so much.